cliffcentral.com. It's time for Collectomania. So let's turn our attention to Dean. He's got a collection of flight gear, and we tracked him down, and we decided we would speak to him. So Dean is a self-confessed military aviation junkie. He's collected over 50 helmets. Yep. Many with masks, 15 G suits, including an example of the first South African-made G suit, 19 flight suits, 7 life preservers, 2 survival suits, and various goggles, boots, gloves, headsets, survival jackets, and flight jackets. Hey, Dean, you nutcase, how are you?
Gareth, yeah, thanks very much, and thanks for having me.
No, I don't think you're a nutcase. There's so many of us who collect strange stuff, and I mean, I'm one of them, so I'm in no position to criticize you. So, Dean...
Yeah, please speak to some of my friends.
I will, because I'm absolutely sure you have friends who collect even more weird things than you do. This is a pretty unique thing to be collecting, though, and I can see some of them on the back, in the back of your picture now. There's a flight
suit. I invited a friend, a visitor, too.
You got some creepy guy standing in the background with a helmet... And a flight suit. All right, so
I'm hoping it will help with any potential break-ins.
Bro, they'll frighten the hell out of me. If I woke up in the middle of the night and that thing was standing in the passage, yeah, I think I'd be a little bit frightened. Yeah. So, Dean, tell us how it all started. How did you begin collecting, and where did this interest stem from?
Well, I've been really interested in aircraft aviation flying ever since junior school. Mm-hmm. And I think if you track down some of my school buddies, I think the only thing they'll remember about me is that I never stopped talking about aeroplanes. Mm-hmm. And I did my national service in the Air Force in the late 80s.
Right.
And fortunate to get into the Air Force. So I managed to acquire one or two surplus items at that stage.
Yeah.
And then I carried on with life, and I started a website on the Air Force in 1994. Mm-hmm. That was when the internet was still in its infancy. The website's still going strong, saairforce.co.za. Carried on with my love of aviation flying, started writing articles for various local and national magazines, and so on. And arising from the website, a whole lot of people would contact me to say their fathers, their grandfathers used to serve in the Air Force during World War II and so on. And they've passed on and they want to find out more details about that person. So that got me started to thinking maybe I should publish a book on people's experiences in the Air Force. So I chatted to a whole lot of people with experiences from pre-World War II all the way up to the guys currently serving in the DRC, and that book on the personal experiences of people in the Air Force was published a few years ago.
Yeah.
And then about 3 years ago, the bug of collecting flight gear hit again. I found one or two of the items which I'd still in storage, and I thought, let me carry on with this. And ever since then, my bank balance has been depleting at a steady rate.
So Dean, I mean, first of all, is it possible to get all this stuff? Because a lot of it is military equipment. And, you know, for some civilians, that's not allowed. It's very, in some countries, if you're in possession of uniforms, flight suits, helmets, that kind of thing, they often look at you like some kind of criminal because you shouldn't have those in your collection. So is it hard to get those here, or is it pretty easy for you?
You've got to be careful that it's not current South African Defence Force equipment, particularly uniforms, because particularly camouflage uniforms is prohibited for private people to be in possession of current uniforms. But we've been quite lucky with the flight suits and so on that most of what we collect is out of service. Mm-hmm. And have managed to acquire one or two items that, you know, are still in service,
right,
such as boots or gloves and that kind of thing. But it doesn't appear to be an issue. I don't try to pass myself off as a current pilot.
The reason, just to explain to people who might be thinking, well, why would that be a problem? Obviously, you can't impersonate a military member of the military, a soldier or a pilot or any of those things, because obviously there are security concerns around that. Most people only accept that someone is in the armed forces if they can see them in the uniform, right? So if you're collecting the uniform, they may mistake you for being someone in authority, and you could probably do all kinds of nefarious things.
That's right, exactly. I think people, if I walk around in the local shopping center and dressed up like the gentleman behind me, I think, well, mind you, in these COVID days, they might actually...
people probably think you were just being extremely cautious, you know, like those people who wear the mask and the face visor and earmuffs and God knows what else, because I've seen a few of those around. So, Dean, let's just talk about the actual items in your collection for a second. I got a couple of pictures here, and we're going to share these with everybody, and you can just talk us through some of them. So, first of all, those helmets on the shelf behind you. Let's take a look at those. What do we got here?
Yes. Well, on the very left is a leather helmet dating back to 1937.
Wow.
I should mention that because there's quite a lot of World War II collectors out there. So I've kind of concentrated my collection from 1945 to current.
Yeah.
But I have acquired this 1937 one with goggles. I must point out that those goggles on there is fake goggles. It's the only fake item in my entire collection. But I thought it just suited this particular item. And you can actually see attached to it is like two metal tubes.
Yeah, you can see that.
Pieces or tubes. And those in the early aircraft, where there were no electrics, there were no radios, intercoms. So that is how the pilots spoke to each other. They plugged it into a tube and they literally shouted at each other into the other one's ear via this tube.
God, that's incredible.
Running between the two cockpits.
I wondered what that was because I thought it can't be oxygen. You know, it's going to their ears.
No, that's right.
Oh, how incredible.
So,
all right. Are those ones on the left, the leather ones, is that the oldest one you've got?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. All right.
That's correct. Yeah. And then second from the left, that's a Type D Air Force flying helmet. That backs to the latter days of World War II with a Type H mask, if I get a little bit technical. And so that was used from the late World War II, in fact, all the way until the 1980s.
Yes.
And particularly the oxygen mask to the late 1980s. The helmet itself was into the 1950s, early 60s.
Okay.
And with a Mark 8 goggles. And then the third one from the left, or second from the right, that's a Mark 3 helmet. Also British in origin, same type of mask, and that actually had a leather inner. You can just cut like a grey leather cloth under it.
Yes,
and then this hard helmet out that covers it, and that was used from the early mid 60s to the 70s, and so on.
And the last one there, is that the newest?
Yeah, that's a Geno 316. That's a very common one that was used in the Air Force from the mid-80s, early to mid-80s, all the way to the 90s. And in fact, in general squadron use. And in fact, that helmet is still being used today.
I think Leanne has one of those. She calls it
school.
Leanne has one of those. She calls it her sleeping Jesus. She actually uses that for to sleep with.
Yeah, it's my CPAP machine, and I must say I feel very at home with these guys on the shelf.
Exactly.
And the one behind you. Someone mentioned that I might be scared by the mannequin behind you, but I think he's more like my knight in shining armor because we identify with each other with our pipes coming out of our mouths.
There's a lot of these that we can't go into too much detail on. But how many helmets how many helmets are there altogether?
I've got over 50 now.
My goodness.
Of the helmets.
Where do you store them? In boxes like this in the garage?
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
There's just too much space in the house to store them individually.
Yeah.
So the helmet, the garage is getting quite full. And I must all kudos to my wife, Jody. She's even allowed some of the overflow to be in the house. And I say, yes, at the end of the year, I'll have time. I will find space to pack them back again. But I think speak to Electa and these things happen.
Yeah, I always feel sorry for the husbands and wives of collectors because they really have to put up with the most nonsense. They have to clear space in their house. They have to give up whole rooms sometimes for these collections to be housed. It's not easy being married to someone who collects stuff.
And the distinction, we are not hoarders.
Yeah.
These are collections. They're historical interest. Yes. I use them for research because actually for each item that I collect, I'm actually researching and going into the history of each item. Sometimes I can actually identify the individual person who actually flew with the item.
Wow.
I've been in contact with some of them. And I'm actually planning on writing a book now on all South African Air Force flight gear since 1945. Wow. And I've actually contacting like the survival section staff you served in and currently serving in the Air Force, manufacturers, distributors for information and so on. And it's actually quite amazing about in the 1980s, because of sanctions and so on, the amount of development that occurred in South Africa, just on, I think, very boring and plain vanilla flight suits and helmets and things.
Yeah.
But some of them are actually so technologically advanced that the one helmet you had in a picture, and I can actually show you my pride and joy.
Yes.
This particular one.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is that?
And this is a, and I've put the visor down and I can put the visor back up. You can't really see it.
We can see it in this darkness.
Tremendous. There we go.
Yeah.
And that is the very first operational helmet-mounted sight used in the world. And that was in the early 80s. That was integrated on the South African Mirage 3s, which allowed the pilots just to look at the target, at the opposing aircraft, designate that aircraft with its air-to-air missile, and allow it to shoot the missile just by looking at the aircraft, instead of having to point the aircraft, wait for a tone and beep and for the missile seeker to lock on. Yeah, the pilot would turn his head, look at the aircraft. Obviously, in those years, you couldn't look too far to the left or the right.
Yeah, sure.
But that was slave to the missile's infrared seeker, which would look for the heat of the exhaust. The seeker would then turn in the same direction.
Terrific.
And the pilot can then fire the missile. And this was hugely secret in those years. And in fact, I'm sure you've heard of Dieter Gerhardt, who was a Navy commander in charge of Simonstown.
Mm-hmm.
And little known to the South Africans at the time, he was actually a Russian spy. And he managed to get one of these helmets to the Russians.
Oh, wow. That disrupted things.
Which greatly developed, you know, the Russians' technology on this type of thing. And in fact, this technology is still being developed in South Africa today. Technology is very different, obviously, over the years. But it's had its groundings in South Africa.
You have written books. I mean, in 2013, you published a book called Tumult in the Clouds, which is the stories from the South African Air Force, 1920 to 2010. And you've also created and maintained an unofficial South African Air Force website. And, you know, I've been to the Military History Museum, the Imperial War Museum in Joburg a couple of times. I hope that they're looking after things there because, you know, there's so much of our heritage that's held in these museums and these places where we're supposed to have them preserved and cared for. And I just wonder if it isn't someone passionate like you, whether the people who are entrusted with this duty in various places, not just the Imperial War Museum, but all over the country, where we're meant to be cataloging, archiving, restoring, and maintaining our collections, it bothers me that they might not be the people who are as passionate as you are, for example. Do you often pop in there and just make sure that they're doing their job?
Well, I do try to pop in as much as I can. Obviously, not to make sure they're doing the job, but
I have a solution. Sorry, Dean. Is change your helmet every time you go. You just pop in, they don't know who you are every time. You're just there walking around, and you don't say a thing like the Stig.
I must try it the next time. I'll let you know how it goes.
Sorry.
It's amazing though that this website of yours, it's saairforce.co.za. I mean, really, you know, in any organized country, the Air Force themselves would have a website where they would have all this information and this stuff on. But it's you who has to do this.
That's right. That's right. Mm. I mean, I started the website, I say, in 94. Before the Defense Force, the Air Force had their own websites.
Wow.
Any later years did they start the websites. And if you go to the Air Force's website now, it's just a blank land page because of internal issues that cannot actually maintain their own website. So you're right. It is left to us enthusiasts to fly the flag. In no way, shape, or form are we harking back to the pre-94 days or anything like that. It's just from our love of aircraft, and that is what we're not lovers of war as such. We just love the technology, the flight, and we have a passion for it, and we just want to share it with as many people as possible.
So Steve says, a nice collection. I bet your most wanted ones would be the new F-35 and AH-64 helmets. Is that about right? Is Steve on the money?
He's spot on. In fact, I'm also a correspondent for Defense Web.
Mm-hmm.
I write for them on naval and aviation matters. And so you come into contract with various other Air Force defense attachés and so on. And I must admit, the topic has come up of acquiring an F-35 helmet.
Is it easy to do?
I'm serious. They seem to think I'm joking for some reason. I'm not sure why, but
no.
Yeah. Are you ever going to be able to get these things, or are there people selling them on eBay, for example?
The current top of the line technology, I think it's they cost a good few million dollars each.
Oh, right. Okay.
And in the tens of millions of dollars. I think they're slightly out of my price bracket.
Yeah.
And but I think that technology is very closely held for the moment.
Wow.
But I have seen the Gripen helmets that the South Africans use, South Africans use also two different helmets, but the common everyday helmet I have seen for sale once or twice on eBay at a suitable price. And I looked, I cried, I closed the web page.
Oh, wow. Just because the price is so high.
That's right.
Sure. Well, I wonder, you probably go to one of these Air Force bases and you'd probably just find some lying around if you looked hard enough, because we've let our military go to rack and ruin, and I don't think there's anyone actually keeping track of these things. There used to be like quartermasters who would make absolutely sure that everything was accounted for and that they kept track of all the stock. Now I don't think that happens much. Certainly it doesn't happen to the degree where it's disciplined and orderly.
Yes, I think the Air Force is still ahead of the Army in that respect, because these are personal issue items. Some of these helmets, the guys have to fly overseas to have them fitted properly.
Really?
Because they're so advanced and they're suited to each individual pilot that all these items are actually on their personal names.
That's amazing.
And they're responsible for it. And when they move from squadron to squadron or something like that, they've got to account for these items.
Well, so, Dean, I have to tell you, this is fantastic. Just when we think we've covered all of the different areas that collections can go into, we meet someone like you who's brought in a completely different view and range of collection. So keep doing this. It's great to see. And I just love the fact that there are people like you who are making every part of the collection world interesting. This is really, really cool. Keep up the collections. I hope it grows. I hope you get a really nice cash injection so you can buy all those helmets that you don't already have. Keep writing. It's great to know that there are people who are also hugely passionate about these subjects and make it interesting for the rest of us.
No, thanks, Gareth and team. I really appreciate being on here.
No problem.
And been great fun, and I really enjoy sharing my hobby with everyone.
Very, very nice to see you. Thank you so much,
awesome.
Dean. There he is. There's Dean. And Dean, just quickly before I say goodbye to you, I see there's even a wing in your surname, Wingren.
Yes, right.
So it's our
horses for
destiny.
Course.
Destiny.
Yeah, there we are. Yeah. It's meant to be. All right. Thank you very much, Dean Wingren, and his collection of helmets and flight equipment and flight suits, G suits, all kinds of cool stuff. Goggles, boots, gloves, headsets. He's got a whole lot. It's very, very cool. I just wonder.
G-suits, G-strings, the lot.
No, the G-strings are your collection, Leanne.
No, but also he's an aviation guy. Listen, I don't care who you are as a girl. Once those guys, I mean, there's us guys who are dickheads in the street. And then when those proper military guys pitch up, I mean, G-strings, he's got plenty of those. He's married now, obviously. He's throwing them away.
Listen, I think it's really great.
That's awesome.
Here again, we're exposed to a collection. If you'd said to me, we're going to speak to someone who collects flight suits and helmets, I'd have said to you, you're not going to find one of those easily. So if you've got a really cool collection, you want to share it with us, please do let us know. Contact at cliffcentral.com. We would love to hear from you. And also, if you haven't already heard, you should get along to the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. You can check them out at scoinshop.com. Remember to message us on contact@cliffcentral.com for a chance to tell us about your collections. Very, very nice.
So you know what I loved about that one?
Hmm?
Sorry, before we move off, is that it's not like he's collecting basketball shoes or whatever, where in 2 years they'll make new ones and there'll be a new NBA draft and he'll have his own line and that. Mm-hmm. These are so incredible because they've been a part of the advancement and the breakdown of human history. You know, these helmets have been in places and been a part of history which may or may never happen again ever. Mm-hmm. Like it was then. You know, they're incredibly properly valuable right down to the philosophical point. So I hope he finds a young person who'll take it from him as well when he, you know, in 50 years time when he hangs the boots up.
Well, that's always the worry for any collector. I mean, it's not going to keep them up at night because they're really collecting for themselves. But a lot of these collectors that we've spoken to on Collectomania have all said, you know, we're not sure what's going to happen with our collection when we're gone. Because if you don't find someone who's as passionate as you are about this stuff, it's just a mess. It's, you know, it all will, it'll all just fall apart when you're gone. These collections need the people who care about them the most to be around. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. CliffCentral.com.